invite you to turn to the back of your bulletin where you'll find not only the readings from the Proverbs that Mike supplied, but also our passage from James as we continue in this month regarding stewardship and the impossible mission that sometimes stewardship is. It's that time of year. We focus on how we're going to adequately resource our time and talents and treasures. We think about what we have, how we're using what we have, if there's a way to do more, if we need to cut corners. We think about the future. We think about where we're going, and we think about how we're going to get there. And usually that's most formalized in the form of a budget. Because a budget, if nothing else, is about planning. It's about planning for an unknown future, but a future that we're trying as best as possible to prepare for. It's that process by which we determine a goal, where we want to go, and how we're going to get there with the resources we have at hand and the goals that we have laid before ourselves. That's why, in many ways, planning is an important aspect of stewardship. It really is a part of thinking about what we have, where we want to go, how we want to get there. Mike Bonham says this: good stewardship requires us to allocate resources, both money and people, based on where we believe God is leading us in the future. In other words, good stewardship always requires planning. Now, we plan all the time. We may not realize how much we plan, but we do it. We do it for the long term. Many of us have to plan for career, for vocation. Right now, we're in the process of planning with our daughter what's the next place she's going, what college may she be attending, and there's so much involved in thinking about that unknown future. If we're a little bit older, we start planning for our retirement, thinking about what's in our 401k, thinking about what the future might have for us there. If we're even a little bit older than that, some even plan their own services. They plan for funerals. We have some of those provided by our parishioners, and I'm always grateful for that. It's not a death wish, but it's a way to make sure whatever happens at your service is something that you want. But we don't only plan for the long term, we plan for the immediate future. I bet some of you already have made plans for the holidays coming up, for Halloween, for Thanksgiving, for Christmas, and how you're going to spend that time, who you're going to spend it with. Perhaps you've already begun shopping, planning what gifts you're going to give. Or perhaps you've got a date this week, or you have a night out with a friend, and you're thinking about that. It's already on your calendar, it's on your schedule. And then, when it just comes to this day, many of you probably already have your day planned. I know I do, and I'm not a planner. I really dislike planning. It's not part of my personality whatsoever, but yet I still have a plan for today. My plan was get up, work. Then after work, it was to provide the vow renewal for Twyla and Alan. And then after that, fortunately, my Colts play the Bears, which means that's televised at noon. And go Colts, because the enemy of your enemy is your friend. So you ought to be rooting for my Colts if any day today. Then after the Colts, I will probably take a nap. And after the nap, I'll wake up and I'll watch the Packers versus the Giants. And then who knows what else. Then the day's free. But I have a day planned. However, plans often don't turn out the way we plan them. I probably will fall asleep during the Colts-Bears game. I always do. It doesn't matter what I do. I try to stay awake, but by about 1 or 2 o'clock, my body's shutting down and I'm just ready to sleep. It doesn't matter what's on or who's playing or what movie I'm watching. Because plans, as much as we plan, tend to sometimes be futile. They fall apart. And when we talk about planning on a long-term scale, budgets, stewardship programs, it's always interesting that we never should forget that old axiom: want to make God laugh? Tell God your plans. Because there's no better way to make God laugh than to say, here's what we plan to do. And in fact, if you look at our passage in James, James shows you how impossible it really is to plan. He talks about a person who's planning for the year ahead and where they're going and how they'll spend their time there and how they'll do business and make money. And James says, don't you understand? You don't even know what tomorrow will bring. And then he humbles us as mortals, as humans, and says, what's your life? You're just a mist. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, or if the Lord wishes, we will do this and that. The reason James speaks like this is James is instructed by the Hebrew Proverbs. He loves the book of Proverbs, and he's mentioned it again and again in his book. And that's why we have these assorted Proverbs before us, because James puts together in one passage the tension found in the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is about wise living, practical faith. And it invites us to recognize that planning is necessary if we're going to live faithfully. And so you have passages like the first two Proverbs there that speak highly of planning. Without consultation, plans are frustrated, but with many counselors, they succeed. The assumption is if you're going to do something, you ought to ask a number of people about it. And in fact, ask wise people. Ask people who know their stuff that may be able to give you some good counsel about what to do and how to do it, so that if you speak to five people and they all tell you not to do something and you still do it, the joke's on you, because you have heard from the wise counsel of people around you. There's a benefit of the counsel of many. And then you read the second proverb there, 21:5. The plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage. That's a way of saying plans are good, but everyone who's hasty surely comes to poverty. If you know anything about the Proverbs, impulsiveness is always seen as being foolish. There's nothing good about being just plain impulsive. In the book of Proverbs, the idea of prudence or wisdom is you think diligently, carefully, you've thought through, you've planned out, you have a way to move forward, and it's not something that just came as a whim. Because everyone who is hasty, as the proverb says, comes to poverty. So you have this high valuation of plans, and yet at the same time, you have this tension that no matter how well thought out our plans are, we shouldn't count on them. We shouldn't be presumptuous or proud and think just because we've planned it, it has to happen and the plan can never change. So the third proverb down, 16:1, the plans of the heart belong to humans, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. Or the next one, many plans are in a man's heart, but it's the counsel of the Lord that will stand. Or finally, that next one, the mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. So we make the plans, but there's always an additional actor involved in any plans we make. And we own that through faith, that no matter what we plan, no matter what we're doing, we want them to concur with the will of God. We want in some way for God's will to be done, because if we do what we do without God's blessing, the labor's in vain. One of the Psalms of Israel, unless the Lord builds the house, our labor is in vain. We plan, we're the ones laboring, we're the ones doing, but it has to be in concurrence with what the Lord wills, or it is vanity. So when you put the truths of the Proverbs in tension, you find that there are two truths that are almost impossible to live out without walking on a tightrope, that we're to wisely plan for the future. There's a benefit in plans. The diligent and the wise make them. And yet, the faithful understand that all our plans are fallible, and sometimes they're even futile. That's why I titled this message of Mice and Men. You know the quote, "The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry." They're not just plans, they're the best laid plans. And sometimes, no matter how well we plan something out, things just don't turn out as planned. Because the reality is we have less control over our lives than sometimes we give ourselves the illusion that we do. Henry Nouwen, one of my favorite writers, wrote this. He started out wanting to be a priest. He then became a professor. He ended up working at a home. It's called L'Arc, and it's a home where he worked with severely disabled people who could hardly do anything, and he spent his last 10 years there. And near the end of his life, he talks about evaluating the plans he had and what really happened. And he says, while realizing that 10 years ago I didn't have the faintest idea that I would end up where I am now, I still like to keep up the illusion that I am in control of my own life. As we all do. I can look at my own life and see those plans and how nothing has really turned out as planned, and yet God has made all things good. As a young person in my teens, I think I'm about 20, 21 there. Great head of hair, as I'll always say. Wish I still had it. It's not there, and it never will be until glory. But 21 years old, playing in the bars and clubs. I'd done it for 4 years. That was my plan. My plan was to be a musician. That was the only plan. There was no plan B. And yet, that didn't help my life. I was going downhill in that kind of lifestyle. But I can tell you one thing. This 20-something would never think that just 7 years later, he's going to be a Baptist pastor. It wasn't on my agenda. It wasn't on my radar. It wasn't anywhere to be found. And yet, 7 years later, this is what a Baptist pastor looks like. Dream theater there, Adam. Rock and roll. There I am, doing what I never thought I'd be doing, because I gained a great interest in religion, a great interest in faith, wanting to grow, wanting to learn, and having a great joy in sharing what I learned with others, which is at the heart of teaching, that you are learning, and as you learn, you want others to be excited by what you're learning. And so there I was, and my plans were to be doing this at the church I was at for the rest of my life. Little did I know that 10 years later, the last thing I'd want to be is a Baptist pastor, and I'd be pastoring a church in the UCC in West Bend. It wasn't on my radar, wasn't part of the plans, and yet that's what happened. I think of having children. This is my wife and I, and inside my wife is my daughter Carmen, who we're planning for college right now. We had so much trouble conceiving and so many difficulties, and we didn't really think that we'd be able to have a child, and we started to plan to adopt, and as those plans developed and seemed to be insurmountable, all of a sudden a pregnancy stuck. Carmen was there with us, and we were planning on having our first legitimate child. And then we had about, you know, a clear plan of how we're going to raise them as parents. But now we're on plan Z, maybe, plan AA, because as you navigate this strange world of child rearing, you realize that the plans you had and how you're going to raise them have to continually be modified and changed. I think of more recently, just a year and a half ago, my plans had been Terry Tybring is going to be here with me all my ministry here till I retire, no matter what. And yet, she's with the Lord, and we're very grateful for her ministry and life here. But we have the blessing of Jenny, and I'm so grateful for her presence here. And I just, you know, I never would have thought 5 years ago Jenny's going to be working beside me. And yet here she is. So many things we just don't plan out, and yet the Lord is at work. And if we're to be faithful to this fact that we're to wisely plan, but we're to remember our plans are fallible, we have to remember there's always another actor in our lives. There's always another actor in our future. That there is this great mystery at work in our lives called God's providence or God's sovereignty. You can call it whatever you like. But the best way to describe it is if you look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th proverb down, this gives the mystery. All our steps are ordered by the Lord. How then can we understand our own ways? So plan, 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 and yet all your steps are ordered by the Lord. How can you comprehend that? And this Proverbs writer is saying you can't comprehend it. It's beyond fathoming that there's a divine actor seeking your good. It's something you can't understand, but it's not beyond comforting. Because it allows us to be comforted that though we don't know what's going on sometimes, God knows what God is doing. And even when things don't turn out as expected, we can be certain of one thing. God is still with us. And there's a deeper plan at work in our lives that sometimes our plans have to fall apart in order to enter into. This comfort that comes from this is this awareness that the future that we face, which is unknown, which we don't know if we'll be here tomorrow, much less next year, we can face it at the very least without fear. That we don't have to look at the future in anxiety and hopelessness and fear. That there is a future for us because the Lord guides our steps and guides our way. The best way I've known this to be illustrated, there's a book called The Shack, if you've ever read The Shack. And a guy named Mac in The Shack has this encounter with the triune God. And as he's speaking to Jesus, Jesus asks Mac, tell me what you're afraid of, Mac. And Mac says, well, I'm afraid of my past and all the regrets and the bitterness that comes from the past. I'm afraid of the present. I'm not sure if I'll be able to even make it through this day. He's going through a great crisis. But he says, most of all, I'm afraid afraid of the future. I'm afraid of what the next day holds. I'm afraid of dying. I'm afraid of being lonely. I'm afraid of running out of money. I'm afraid of... And he just lists all these fears. And then Jesus says to him, Mac, do you realize that your imagination of the future, which is almost always dictated by fear of some kind, rarely, if ever, pictures me there with you? You see, Mac does what we all do. We make our plans and God's left out. God's not an actor. God's not involved. And we forget that whatever our future holds, God is part of that. So that gives us the confidence to face the future without fear and also to face it boldly, however, not recklessly. Because you can get so supported by the sense that God's with you no matter what you do, that you can begin to get a bit reckless. Let me give you an example of that. 4 or 5 years ago, I had the youth over to my house and we watched a video. It's called Audience of One. If you've never seen it, I highly recommend it. It's a documentary about Pentecostal pastor Richard Gazowski. And he receives, because he's a Pentecostal and they get these kind of things, a vision from the Lord to make an epic movie, a $200 million blockbuster called Gravity, The Shadow of Joseph. And it's going to be Star Wars meets the Ten Commandments, the story of Joseph in sci-fi setting. You know, like Star Wars, only it's Joseph. And so, receiving this vision, Pastor Richard mortgages his house. The church begins to build up support. He takes the entire church to Italy to begin to film this movie. While they're there in Italy, they're able to film 2 scenes before it all falls apart. And 2 scenes, if you know movie making, is like 10, 15 seconds of a movie. So they spend all their money. The church goes into bankruptcy. The whole thing falls apart. These elevated, bold, if not reckless, plans, recognizing God's an actor in this, just crumble to pieces. And the director of the commentary, in order to round out his commentary at the end of his filming, decides to go to a church service one last time to get some additional scenes for his documentary. While he's there, he hears Pastor Richard give his new plans for the future. Are you ready? You can't script this. You'd never believe it if it was scripted.
Is about incredibly intense. And we have been expecting miracles, but at the same time, there's been attacks, and all kinds of things have happened. Where it, at times, the only scripture I can give to explain what we're saying is that in the midst of battle, there was much confusion and noise. Garments rolled in blood and cast into the fire for fuel for the flames. So, in the midst of all of that, the Lord spoke to me and said, now is the time for you to share the vision before this house of the future, the long-term vision. And so this is our vision for the future. We will launch 47 films a year out of our film studio. A Christian theme park that has the glory of God and is based on our films. 8 television networks. And the 8th channel will be a 24-hour prayer network. The Lord gave me a vision of the next generation of camera chip. And it is an organic, living chip. We're going to own an airline. Seven resort towns around the world. The 7th era is that he's taking us into outer space. And the last era that he showed me is we will colonize another planet.
That's enough. You could probably... Now, I thought he was in outer space after the first point. You just wonder what this poor guy's smoking. But he's legitimate. This guy's sincere. If you get nothing else from the documentary, there's a sincere form of craziness. And he really is doing his best to want to honor the Lord. And he does hold that one truth that we need to hold, that God's in his future very strongly. The thing he doesn't recognize is it's our labor, our resources. God builds through what we have available to us. Unless the Lord builds the house, the labor is in vain. But we still need to have the resources and abilities so that the plan is somewhat possible. You know, there's something about his faith that is praiseworthy, I'd argue, but there's so much more that shows nothing but disappointment for his congregation, more disappointment for them, so that you have just a wreckage going on as he's trying to be bold, but he's being reckless in his boldness. So we face the future without fear, for God is with us. We want to be bold, but not reckless. And I think the best way to summarize all we've looked at this morning is to modify John Wesley's way of summarizing how to work with money. He says, you want to plan as if the future depended on it. So we need to think about what we can legitimately do, what our dreams are, where we want to go. But we never should forget that it's all dependent on God. So we pray as if it all depends on God, because no matter how great our plans are, unless the Lord builds the house, our labor is in vain. And then we need to recognize in the midst of it that God often unexpectedly and surprisingly disrupts our plans. So whatever plans we write, they should always be in pencil, never in pen. And they should never be the last word. They're just a step along the way, because we never know how God might take us outside of that box and move us to a different place we never thought. I never thought that God would take a musician, make him a Baptist pastor, make him a UCC pastor, make him a father of three, and so forth. It just wasn't on the plans, and yet it has turned out that way, and bless God for that. If you don't want to remember those three phrases, there's just a simple one you can remember. My mentor, John Armstrong, he's about 20 years my senior. I look to him for support and whenever I have questions about ministry. And he'd oftentimes write me letters, and at the end of them, he'd say, I hope to see you in October, hope to see you then, DV, John. And he'd always throw in DV, and I didn't know what DV meant. I thought DV, Dick Vincent, maybe. That's, you could make my name Dick Vincent if you wanted. But that's not at all what it means. It's Deo Volente. It's Latin, and it means God willing. Which is his way of saying, I hope to see you in October. We'll see each other at the conference, Lord willing. My mother to this day will still say when we make plans, Lord willing. There's something very humble and true. There's an awareness that's enlarged when we're able to say with whatever we plan, DV, Lord willing. Not just as, you know, an appendage that we don't really enter into, but as a reality we recognize that whatever our plans are, and we hope to be diligent and wise in making them, our greatest desire is that God's will would be done. And thus we also say with our plans, Lord willing. So that we reject that presumption and pride you find in that reading from James. That we don't say, we're going to do this and we forget about the Lord. But we remember that it is the Lord's will we hope to accomplish. And God, as the great actor in our lives, is able to do extremely abundantly more than ever we'd hope or plan. To that end, I invite you to pray with me.